I want to talk about Old Testament laws today. And in the Old Testament, we read two very important commands. The one you find in Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 5. And you don't have to turn there, you should know it. It talks about to love God with all our heart. And then there's another Old Testament commandment, which is actually quoted in Leviticus chapter 19 and in verse 18, where it says to love our neighbor as ourselves. So these are two very famous commandments in the Old Testament. But it is interesting that Jesus Christ quoted them in the New Testament in Matthew chapter 22. And let's turn to this very famous passage in Matthew chapter 22, and I like to read beginning in verse 36. Matthew 22, and I'm reading for the 36 till 40. A lawyer came to Christ in verse 36, saying, "Teacher, which is a great commandment in the law?" And Jesus said to him in verse 37, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind." That's a quote from Deuteronomy 6. This is a first and great commandment. And the second is like it. "You shall love your neighbor as yourself." That's a quote from Leviticus 19. Now verse 40. "On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." Let's keep that expression in mind. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. Now, he's talking about the law of the Ten Commandments mainly, which is a spiritual law. You find that in Romans chapter 7, verse 14. You can look at this later. It's a spiritual law. Now, we love God and we love neighbor if we keep the Ten Commandments. And the first four of the Ten Commandments define our love towards God. If you please, the four commandments hang on the love of God. And then you have the last six commandments, and they define our love to neighbor. That is, they hang on the love towards neighbor. Because you see, 1 John chapter 5 and verse 3 tells us that this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments. And we also read in Romans chapter 13, verse 10, that love is the fulfillment of the law. Fulfillment. That is, the love of God motivates us, it helps us, it enables us to fulfill the law to its fullest extent. Now, the fact that the law is spiritual doesn't mean that we now can break the letter of the law. But it is spiritual, which means we are violating already the spirit of the law when we transgress the law in our thoughts. In other words, we don't only violate the law when we kill someone, but we also violate the law already when we hate someone. What I want to talk about today, however, is the fact that the Ten Commandments are explained through Old Testament judgments and statutes. And so these are likewise still valid. Now, I'm not talking about ritual laws. I'm not talking about washings, the sacrificial system, physical circumcision. No, I'm talking about the spiritual statutes and judgments which define and explain from a practical standpoint the spiritual law of the Ten Commandments. They show us how to keep them. And so I want to give you some examples today as to how this all fits together. So you could say that the last six of the Ten Commandments hang on love towards neighbor. And on the last six commandments statutes and judgments hang? In other words, explain further what is meant by that. If you want to do a chart later on, you put on top love, and then you divide it up, love towards God, love towards neighbor. Then you divide it up further, first four commandments here, last six commandments there, and then further on them hang certain statutes and judgments defining love towards God, and other statutes and judgments defining love towards neighbor. And so we are going to look at a few today, not exclusively, there are a lot more, but just to give you proof that those Old Testament statutes and judgments are still valid for you today. You still have to keep them. They still define for us how to keep the Ten Commandments. So let's start with the first one. Let's go to Exodus chapter 20. Now, we should all know the Ten Commandments by heart, but nevertheless, I like to read them and then elaborate on them. Exodus 20, verses 2 to 3. The first commandment. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. So, to have no other gods before or beside the true God defines and shows our love towards God. Now, what does this law all include? What judgment, what statutes hang on that first commandment? Let's look at Exodus chapter 22 and verse 20. Exodus 22 and verse 20. He who sacrifices to any god except to the Lord only, he shall be utterly destroyed. So you're not to sacrifice or give any kind of a sacrifice to other gods. That could be monetary sacrifices today, monetary contributions, you just name it. It is clearly prohibited within the confines of the Ten Commandments. Notice Exodus chapter 23 and in verse 13. Exodus 23 and in verse 13. In all that I have said to you, be circumspect and make no mention of the name of other gods, nor let it be heard from your mouth. No mention in the context of worship, of course. We are talking about the fact that we are not even to think in terms of the names of other gods, thinking that somehow they are related to the true God. That could include saints today. Many people pray to saints. In the Catholic Church, it's a very well-known custom to pray to saints. That's a saint, then, who are allegedly in heaven, intervene on your behalf. It's all totally prohibited. It's all totally in complete violation of what the Bible says. Let's look at Exodus chapter 34. Exodus 34 and in verse 14. Exodus 34 and verse 14. You shall worship no other god, for the Lord, whose name is Jealous, is a jealous God. Don't worship any other god than the true God. Now, the true God is a family. The concept that God is a Trinity would apply here. It would be another god. You don't worship that. It's a false god. And I'm not even talking about all the other gods in any of the other non-Christian religions. Now, notice Leviticus chapter 20. Leviticus chapter 20. And notice verse 6. Leviticus 20 and in verse 6. All part of the first commandment. These are all statutes and judgments which hang on the first commandments. The person who turns after mediums, familiar spirits, to prostitute himself with them, I will set my face against that person and cut him off from his people. Don't go to mediums is the idea. Don't get to familiar spirits, fallen spirits, demons, of course, we're talking about. And all the things which are out there, all the occult which is so prevalent on the internet, Halloween, which is coming up, have nothing to do with it, God is saying. Notice also Deuteronomy chapter 8. Deuteronomy chapter 8, and notice verses 19 and 20. Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse 19. Then it shall be, if you by any means forget the Lord your God and follow other gods and serve them and worship them, I testify against you this day that you shall surely perish. As the nations which the Lord destroys before you, so you shall perish because you would not be obedient to the voice of the Lord your God. Are we in doubt as to why the United States of America, the United Kingdom, Canada, New Zealand, and so on, Australia, South Africa, are going to perish? Here we have one particular reason. There are more reasons, of course. But here's one. Because we are full with false worship of false gods, false ideas, false philosophies. It's all part of not loving the true God in the right way. Notice Deuteronomy chapter 12. Deuteronomy chapter 12, beginning in verse 29. And I'm reading verses 29 to 31. Deuteronomy chapter 12 and verse 29. When the Lord your God cuts off from before you the nations which you go to dispossess, and you displace them and dwell in their land, take heed to yourselves that you are not ensnared to follow them after they are destroyed from before you, and that you do not inquire after their gods, saying, how did these nations serve their gods? I will also do likewise. Well, how did they keep Christmas? Let me do it too. How did they keep Halloween? How did they keep Easter? We just put a Christian mantle on it. See, we apply it to Jesus Christ. Verse 31. You shall not worship the Lord your God in that way, for every abomination to the Lord which he hates, they have done to their gods, for they even burn their sons and daughters in the fire to their gods. Verse 32, whatever I command you, be careful to observe it, and you shall not add nor take away from it. Again, a complete total indictment against our nations today, who totally blatantly violate that command. Following a great, quote-unquote, Christian church, which has really brought home all the wrong ways of worship. That woman, that fallen woman riding the beast in Revelation 17. Now, let's look at another one in Deuteronomy chapter 17, verses 2 to 4. Deuteronomy 17 and verse 2. It says, if there is found among you within any of your gates, which the Lord your God gives you, a man or a woman who has been wicked in the sight of the Lord your God in transgressing his covenant, who has gone and served other gods and worshipped them, either the sun or the moon or any of the host of heaven, which I have not commanded, and it's told you and you hear of it, then you shall inquire diligently. And if it is indeed true and certain that such an abomination has been committed in Israel, then of course you shall bring out to your gates that man or woman who has committed that wicked thing and shall stone to death that man or woman with stones. Now we understand those penalties are no longer in effect today, but the principle are, the transgression is. Well, we wouldn't worship the sun or the moons, would we? Well, what about astrology? What about reading horoscopes, which are all based on these constellations? That's exactly what we can apply today to. It's all wrong. It's all the wrong kind of conduct. It is all totally in violation of the command to love God with all our heart. And then finally, let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 18, beginning in verse 9. We're all talking about the first commandment. It's going to be a long sermon today. Deuteronomy chapter 18 and verse 9. When you come into the land which the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not learn to follow the abomination of those nations. And there shall not be found among you anyone who makes his son or his daughter pass through the fire, or one who practices witchcraft. Boy, are we in a nation today, in nations which practice witchcraft in one way or another. Or a soothsayer, or one who interprets omens, or a sorcerer, or one who conjures spells, or a medium, or a spiritist, or one who calls up the dead. For all who do those things are an abomination to the Lord, and because of these abominations, the Lord your God drives them out from before you. But you shall be blameless before the Lord your God, for these nations which you will dispossess listened to soothsayers and diviners. But as for you, the Lord your God has not appointed such for you. So we shouldn't do any of this. If we do, we don't love God. Any nation which does that doesn't love God. That's the first commandment. Let's go to the second. Let's go back to Exodus chapter 20. And let's notice the second commandment, verses 4 and 5. It's the second commandment. It's not part of the first, you see. It says, you shall not make for yourself any carved image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or that is in the earth beneath or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them nor serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God who visits the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, for six, but showing mercy to thousands, to those who love me and who keep my commandments. Now, correctly rendered and correctly translated, it should read something like that, beginning in verse 4, you shall not make for yourself any carved image, etc., in order to bow down to them. The context is worship. So in other words, you're not supposed to make any statue, any picture, for the purpose of worshiping it. Now, of course, this still includes you're not supposed to make any pictures of God to begin with, you know. But that's wrong, too. But we are talking about for the purpose of worshiping. See, some have gone too far and have said we should never draw any picture of any man. We should never draw any picture of any animal. That's not what it's talking about. It's in the context of worship. Now, let's look what statutes and what judgments hang on that second commandment. Exodus chapter 20 and verse 23. Exodus 20 and verse 23. You shall not make anything to be with me, gods of silver or gods of gold, you shall not make for yourselves. In other words, no idols, nothing, no statutes. And Roman Catholic churches are full with those statutes. And God says specifically, don't do it. If you do it, you don't love me. You violate the second commandment. Leviticus chapter 19 and verse 4. Leviticus 19 and verse 4. Do not turn to idols, nor make for yourselves molded gods. I am the Lord your God. So no statutes, no molded gods, no anything representing God in any way for the purpose of trying to worship him or get an idea as to how God might look like. All of this is clearly prohibited. Leviticus chapter 26. Leviticus 26 and verse 1. See, it's not only talking about molten images, because here more is stated. You shall not make idols for yourselves, neither a carved image nor a sacred pillar shall you rear up for yourselves, nor shall you set up an engraved stone in your land. And here is the point, to bow down to it. See, that's the context. He says, for I am the Lord your God. So the point is, you don't have a picture. You don't have a, it says here, a pillar. You don't have a tree which you decorate around Christmas time and then sitting in front of it singing Christmas carols. You don't have any of that. In clear violation of the law of God. Deuteronomy chapter 4. It's amazing to me that people in the Worldwide Church of God who knew this at one time can now be seen on Facebook sitting in front of Christmas trees and singing Christmas carols. Do they still love God with all their heart? Well, obviously, they do not. Deuteronomy chapter 4, beginning at verse 15. Take careful heed to yourselves, For you saw no form when the Lord spoke to you at Horeb out of the midst of the fire, lest you act corruptly and make for yourselves a carved image in the form of any figure, the likeness of male or female, the likeness of any beast that is on the earth, or the likeness of any winged bird that flies in the air. In the context of representing God, we are talking about, of course. The likeness of anything that creeps on the ground, or the likeness of any fish that is in the water beneath the earth. And take heed that lest you lift your eyes to heaven, and when you see the sun, the moon, the stars, all the host of heaven, you feel driven to worship them and serve them which the Lord your God has given to all the peoples under the whole heaven as a heritage. But the Lord has taken you and brought you out of the iron furnace, out of Egypt, to be his people, his inheritance, as you are this day. Verse 21. Well, let's stop us there right now. It makes it very clear what we are not supposed to be doing. We're not supposed to be doing or creating pictures or statues of a man or an animal representing in our minds somehow God. Not only thinking, well, you know, this is how God looks, not even representing him. That's already prohibited as well. Deuteronomy 16. Deuteronomy 16, verses 21 and 22. See, again, the statutes and the judgments which we are reading here makes this clear. You wouldn't know all the details without some of these examples here. That's why God has them in here. Deuteronomy 16, verses 21 and 22. You shall not plant for yourselves any tree. Here we go. As a wooden image near the altar which you built for yourself to the Lord your God, you shall not set up a sacred pillar which the Lord your God hates. Not a tree. Actually, we're talking about here a tree made out of wood, like the Christmas tree. We're also talking about, when it talks about here a picture or a statue, in the original it talks about a statue of Asherah, which is actually another name for Ishtar or Easter. So the Easter and Christmas celebrations were already well known at the time amongst the pagans. It didn't come in existence with Christ. They were existing long before Christ was born. And finally, Deuteronomy chapter 27. Deuteronomy 27 and verse 15. Now, we are either blessed or we are cursed. We are blessed when we love God. We are cursed when we don't. And notice, cursed is the one who makes any carved or molded image an abomination to the Lord, the work of the hands of the craftsman, and sets it up in secret even. Oh, well, I'm not doing it publicly. I just do it at my home. What's wrong with having a little cross there hanging on the wall? And all the people shall answer and say, Amen. Cursed is that person. We need to ask ourselves why so many people seem to be living under curses. Let's go to the third commandment. Exodus 20 and in verse 7. Exodus 20 and verse 7. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. Now, what statutes, what judgments hang on this third commandment? For instance, Exodus 22 and in verse 28. It says, you shall not revile God, nor curse a ruler of your people. You shall not revile God. You shall not have any contempt for God or what God may be doing in your life. That's part of taking God's name in vain. Also notice Leviticus chapter 19. Leviticus 19 and verse 12. Leviticus 19 and verse 12. You shall not swear by my name falsely. Of course, Christ in the New Testament tells us we shouldn't swear at all. But, you know, you can give, for instance, an affirmation. That's fine. But don't do it falsely. And most certainly not when in any way God's name is involved. He goes on to say, though, nor shall you profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. Now, profanity is rampant, you know. I mean, it gets to the point that you can hardly even watch a television program anymore. And, you know, sometimes you get so used to it, you don't even notice it anymore until you really make it a point to listen to it. And then you do get upset, don't you? I mean, it used to be when I was traveling on airplanes that we got movies shown which were censored. And there was no profanity in those movies, and certain scenes were cut out. I notice now that's no longer the case. You know, now they are uncensored. And there are young kids sitting there, young children, and they hear all of that. So it gets worse and worse. Notice Deuteronomy chapter 18. Deuteronomy 18. And even though some of the movies may be funny, but if you hear profanity all the time, you don't want to even watch the movie. At least that's how I feel. After a while, you get just sick of it, you know, and you wonder, some of that stuff is so totally superfluous, it's being put in, I don't know, maybe to get a certain rating or what. Deuteronomy 18, verses 20 to 22. Here's another one, how you profane God's name, how you speak in vain, how you use God's name in vain. Verse 20, but the prophet who presumes to speak a word in my name, which I haven't commanded him to speak, or who speaks in the name of other gods, that prophet shall die. So either way, here comes a prophet who says, oh, I'm speaking in the name of the Lord, or I'm speaking in the name of Allah and of Buddha and of whatever. Either way, God says, that false prophet shall die. He goes on to say, and if you say in your heart, how shall we know the word which the Lord has not spoken? When a prophet speaks in the name of the Lord, if the thing doesn't happen or come to pass, that is the thing which the Lord hasn't spoken. The prophet has spoken it presumptuously. You shall not be afraid of him. Now, far too many who speak in the name of the Lord, giving us concepts as to when Christ might come back. Well, they say it's speculation, but at the same time, they speak with such authority that after a while, members feel like it's no longer speculation. I've heard somebody several years ago give a sermon, started off as saying it's speculation, and then everything he said was just total speculation. But since he said it so many times, when he was done, people felt that was the gospel truth. A great warning here not to do this, because God says, I will cut off those prophets, those ministers who say they speak with godly inspiration. So, a remark, a strong commandment to true ministers of God, not to say anything wrongly in the name of God. If you don't know, if you cannot prove it from the Bible, don't say it. But don't pretend as if you knew something others don't know. You give them something new which others don't have because you have that special insight. Very, very dangerous to do this. Let's go to the fourth commandment. Exodus chapter 20, and notice verse 8. Exodus 20 and verse 8. Now here comes a tough one for just about everybody outside the church of God. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. You see, man cannot make anything holy. God made the Sabbath day holy when he created man. And so we have to remember the fact that God made the Sabbath day holy, and we have to keep it holy. Notice Deuteronomy chapter 5 gives you further additional information here. Deuteronomy chapter 5. And let's look at verses 12 to 14. Deuteronomy chapter 5 and beginning in verse 12. Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy as the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. In other words, whatever work you have, whatever labor you want to do, do it within those 6 days. Doesn't mean that you can never go on vacation, you see. But do it within those 6 days. Verse 14, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work. You, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your manservant, nor your maidservant, nor your ox, nor your donkey, nor any of your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates, that your manservant and your maidservant may rest as well as you. If you have a business, you close it down on the Sabbath. And you don't have your employees work on the Sabbath while you take off. No. These are your manservants. These are your maidservants. These are those who are under your control. You don't have somebody come in on the Sabbath to your property to do work on your property, if it's your property. See, you are in your absolute right not to allow this. Now, here we have some statutes and some judgments which show how further we have to understand this commandment. So, in other words, let's look at the fourth commandment now, and let's look at the statutes and the judgments which hang on that fourth commandment. For instance, Exodus chapter 23. Exodus chapter 23 and in verse 12. 6 days you shall do your work. On the seventh day you shall rest, that your ox and your donkey may rest, and the son of your maidservant even and the stranger may be refreshed. So nobody's supposed to work. Even the animals are supposed to be refreshed, to rest. It shows the holiness of the Sabbath. Notice Exodus chapter 34. See, rather than working, we're supposed to celebrate the Sabbath because the Sabbath is a feast day. In Exodus chapter 34, notice in verse 21. Again, 6 days you shall work, but on the seventh day you shall rest. And here another additional comment is made. In plowing time and in harvest you shall rest. No exception here. It's not like, oh, well, you know, now it's time for the harvest. Now we have to go out and harvest, right? No, no. Not when it comes to the Sabbath. You don't. You don't do it. You rest. And, of course, there are other scriptures I could quote. There is a land Sabbath, which is to be observed in the seventh year. And you find that in Exodus chapter 23, in verses 10 to 11. And, of course, you also have another hall year, every 50th year, hall Sabbath, you can call it. And you find that in Leviticus chapter 25, verses 8 to 11. That's all part of the fourth commandment, all part of the Sabbath. Now, some of these we might not be able today individually to observe them in that extent because they were more related to the entire nation, but we can do what we can do as individuals to stay within the spirit of those commandments. But here's another one I want to point out. Now, some may keep the weekly Sabbath. Some may have figured out some arguments which they want to accept intellectually that, yeah, well, we still have to keep the Sabbath, but they refuse. Virtually all refuse, except those in the Church of God, to keep the annual holy days. But the annual holy days are also Sabbaths. They're all part of the fourth commandment. Notice this in Leviticus chapter 23. Leviticus 23, and notice it in verse 32. Here it's talking about the Day of Atonement. The Day of Atonement we just kept. Notice how it's defined. In verse 32, it shall be to you a Sabbath of solemn rest, and you shall afflict your souls, and on the ninth day of the month at evening, from evening to evening, you shall celebrate your Sabbath. So the commandment, the fourth commandment to keep the Sabbath includes the commandment to keep the annual holy days, which are also Sabbath. So in other words, this statute, this judgment hangs on the fourth commandment. And of course, there are other statements here throughout the Bible which define holy days as Sabbaths. In the New Testament, for instance, the first day of unleavened bread is referred to as a high Sabbath. And so again, you can't do the one without the other. Now let's look at the fifth commandment. Now, just to explain, I understand, of course, the Jews do keep the Sabbath and the holy days, to an extent, but not really in the way the Bible says it, because they don't keep the holy days completely either. When it comes to the Feast of Tabernacles, they don't keep the entire time. And, of course, they also have some divisions as to when to keep certain days, counting different ways. Let's go to the fifth commandment in Exodus chapter 20. Exodus chapter 20 and in verse 12. Here's the fifth commandment. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving you. Now, which statutes, which judgments hang on that fifth commandment? The first one, which defines love towards neighbor. Well, let's look at a few. Exodus chapter 21 and in verse 15. Exodus 21 and verse 15. He who strikes his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. See, you don't honor your parents if you abuse them physically. God was very strong on that one. They had to be put to death when they did that. But not only are we talking about physical abuse, we're also talking about spiritual abuse. Exodus 21 and in verse 17, it says, he who curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. So, striking is out. Cursing is out. Rather, we find in Leviticus chapter 19 and in verse 3. Leviticus 19 and in verse 3. Every one of you shall revere his mother, his father. In other words, respect them. And keep my Sabbath. Again, you know, the connection is interesting. I am the Lord your God. So we are to respect our parents. Honor them in the sense that we have respect for them. Now, we don't have to obey them when they tell us something to do which is not right. But even then, we should never begin to have disrespect for them. That can sometimes be difficult, but it's something which God requires us to do, because we are to love our neighbor as ourselves. Notice Leviticus chapter 19 and in verse 32. Leviticus 19 and verse 32. You shall rise before the gray-headed and honor the presence of an old man and fear your God, I am the Lord. See, the margin in my Bible has, you shall rise to give honor. See, in other words, again, the concept is you do show honor to older people, not even only your parents. See, this particular statute here is part of the fifth commandment. Practical example, I mean, it used to be a lot more common that you would drive in public transportation. Today, everybody seems to have his or her own car, but you know, I've seen many times that young kids were sitting in a bus or in a train and an old person came in and they would be sitting there, wouldn't offer their seat, and there was no other seat available to the older people. That's a total violation and abomination in God's eyes. No, you rise, you give respect to an older man, to an older woman. You see, that's all part of the fifth commandment. Notice Deuteronomy chapter 21. Deuteronomy chapter 21, beginning in verse 18. Deuteronomy chapter 21, beginning in verse 18. If a man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and who, when they have chastened him, will not heed them, then his father and his mother shall take hold of him and bring him out to the elders of a city, to the gate of a city, and they shall say to the elders of a city, this son of ours is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard. And then all the men of his city shall stone him to death with stones. You shall put away the evil person from among you, and all Israel shall hear and fear. Now, as I said, we don't carry out the penalty here, but the principle is clearly here. Parents cannot allow their children to be so disobedient that they don't follow their command. And you start when the children are small. When the children are older, it's going to be very tough. As I said, I'm going to prepare a sermon on child rearing. It's very important that you understand that. Here's one principle. It's one principle. And of course, here this son, we don't know how old he is, but he became a glutton and a drunkard and so on, and he was absolutely disobedient. Notice Deuteronomy chapter 27 and in verse 16. Deuteronomy 27 and verse 16. Cursed is the one who treats his father or his mother with contempt. And all the people shall say, Amen. Never treat your parents with contempt. That's something which doesn't show love towards your neighbor. Let's look at the next commandment, the sixth commandment. In Exodus chapter 20 and in verse 13. It's a hardly debated one, even in certain circles within the Church of God. Exodus 20 and verse 13, it says, You shall not murder, in the New King James. It says, You shall not kill, in the Authorized Version. And both conditions are correct. Because killing and murdering in the context mean the same thing, as I will show you. Now, which statutes, which judgments hang on this commandment? Well, first of all, let's look at something you might not even think would fall under it, but it most certainly does. In Exodus 21 and in verse 12, he who strikes a man so that he dies shall surely be put to death. Now, he strikes the man so that he dies. It appears that this is talking about intentional killing. But there's more to it. Not only intentional killing is prohibited. Because let's look at the next verse in verse 13. You see, here's intentional killing with an evil motive, which we are talking about in verse 13. But if he didn't lie in wait, but God delivered him into his hands, then I will appoint for you a place where he may flee. But verse 14, if a man acts with premeditation against his neighbor to kill him with guile, you shall take him from the altar, which normally gives protection, that he may die. So you have two scenarios. One is intentional killing with hatred, let's say, with guile, premeditation. The other one is negligent killing, if you please. But even negligent killing had a penalty. See, God allowed it. Why did God allow it? Right? So he had to flee. He had to go to this place of safety, the city of refuge, and he had to stay there until the high priest died. And if he left that city, he could be killed. So there was still a penalty involved because he obviously wasn't careful enough not to kill someone. And so that is also included in the command, which tells us not to kill. In Exodus chapter 21, let's now go to Numbers in chapter 31. Numbers 31 and let's look at verse 19. Because some say, yeah, but I mean, you know, killing in war, that's fine. That's not prohibited in the Old Testament. But we know it's clearly prohibited in the New. Christ says, you know, if you take a sword, you shall die by the sword. But it's clearly prohibited in the Old Testament as well. Here's one scripture proving this. Deuteronomy chapter 31 and verse 19. Here were people who had killed others in war. It says in verse 19, And as for you, remain outside the camp 7 days. Whoever has killed any person, whoever has even touched any slain, it says, purify yourselves and your captives on the 3rd day and on the 7th day. Purify, literally, get rid of sin. God clearly defines here killing in war as sin. And our booklet on Should You Fight in War proves that beyond a shadow of a doubt that even in the Old Testament, killing in war was sin. And some even today in the Church of God still haven't gotten that point. And ultimately, they will fight in war. The Bible makes that clear. Some in God's church will go so far off that they will literally and actively participate in war, as some have already done. It's sin. And here we see clearly that they had to get rid of that sin. They were not allowed to come back into the camp for 7 days until that process was completed. Then also look at Deuteronomy chapter 19. Deuteronomy 19, verses 11 and 12. Deuteronomy 19 and verse 11. If anyone hates his neighbor, lies in wait for him, rises against him, strikes him mortally, so that he dies, and he flees to one of the cities, then the elders of the city shall send and bring him from there and deliver him over to the hand of the avenger of blood, that he may die. And your eyes shall not pity him, but you shall put away the guilt of innocent blood from Israel, that it may go well with you. So they were not allowed to go to that city of refuge if they had hate in their heart, and that hate prompted them to kill. You see, Christ said, if you hate somebody, you're already a murderer. You don't even have to go through with the literal killing a person. And then finally, in Deuteronomy chapter 27, and in verse 24, Deuteronomy 27 and verse 24. Cursed is the one who attacks his neighbor secretly. And all the people shall say, Amen. These were statutes and judgments hanging on the sixth commandment, you shall not kill. Let's look at the seventh commandment. What is the seventh commandment? Well, let's turn to Exodus 20. And notice verse 14. Exodus 20 and verse 14. You shall not commit adultery. Now, which statutes, which judgments, amongst others, hang on this commandment? Now, just notice Exodus chapter 22. And let's look at verse 19. Now, think in terms of adultery. And then notice what it says. Whoever lies with a beast shall surely be put to death. That's part of the commandment against committing adultery, because what you do is totally not within the confines of as to why God created sex. You're doing something outside the confines of marriage, and it's an abomination in God's eyes, no matter what it is. Because here is another one in Leviticus chapter 18. And verse 22. I was just reading in the paper that in the city of Houston, Texas, the city summoned in sermons from ministers who spoke on homosexuality. Well, they can get my sermon too. Because notice, Leviticus 18 and verse 22, even though I'm not living in Houston, Texas. You shall not lie with a male as with a woman. It is an abomination. One of these statutes which define what it means not to commit adultery. Any sexual conduct outside the confines of marriage constitutes adultery. And marriage is between a man and a woman, period. One man and one woman. But what about fornication? Well, what I've said so far should already answer that one. But in Leviticus 19 and in verse 29, Leviticus 19 and verse 29, do not prostitute your daughter to cause her to be a harlot, lest the land fall into harlotry and the land become full of wickedness. And also in chapter 21 and verse 9, the daughter of any priest even, if she profanes herself by playing the harlot, she profanes her father, because she also brings ill repute on the father, obviously, and she shall even be burned with fire. Very strong statements, very strong commandments. You see, that is, perhaps you could say, well, prostitution. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean that you cannot have any sexual relationships between two people who are not married yet. But look at Deuteronomy chapter 22. Deuteronomy chapter 22, beginning in verse 28. Now, if a man finds a young woman who is a virgin who is not betrothed. Now, betrothed was more than just engaged. It was a contract. And if a woman was betrothed to a man, they were already considered man and wife, so that would already be the clear-cut adultery situation if something happened. Here is a virgin who is not betrothed yet, so she is still free in that sense. But notice how it goes on. And he seizes her and lies with her, and they are found out. Then the man who lay with her shall give to the young woman's father 50 shekels of silver, and she shall be his wife because he has humbled her. He shall not be permitted to divorce her all his days. You know, that provision was enacted to prevent that kind of thing from happening. Of course, there was an exception. If the father refused, then they didn't have to go through with it. But there was a strong warning for young people not to engage just for casual fun, so to speak, because there was a stiff consequence involved here. Fornication amongst those who are not married yet is in violation of the commandment against committing adultery. Now, it's very common in Germany that young people live together, or even older people live together without being married. But what customs may allow is immaterial to us, because we look at what the Bible says, and the Bible doesn't allow it. Now, let's look at the eighth commandment, Exodus chapter 20. Exodus chapter 20 and in verse 15. Another very short one. You shall not steal. You shall not steal. Now, let's look at some of the statutes and judgments which define this further, or again asking the question, what statutes and judgments hang on this commandment not to steal? Exodus 21 and in verse 16. Exodus 21 and verse 16. He who kidnaps a man and sells him, or if he is found in his hand, shall surely be put to death. Now, is kidnapping a person stealing? Is this actually an interpretation, an explanation of what stealing means? Well, let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 24. And let's look at verse 7. Deuteronomy 24 and verse 7. If a man is found kidnapping any of his brethren of the children of Israel and mistreats him or sells him, then that kidnapper shall die, and you shall put away the evil person from among you. Now, if you look at some other translations where it talks about kidnapping, it actually means stealing. In fact, my margin said it too. If a man is found literally stealing any of his brethren. So kidnapping is stealing. When it says you shall not steal, it includes kidnapping another human being. And there's a lot of stealing going on, and has been going on. Think of the abominable curse of slavery throughout the centuries. I mean, a terrible curse actually was put on those who were engaging this kind of stuff. Now, the Bible clearly condemns that. Notice also in Leviticus chapter 19. Leviticus 19 and notice verse 36. Leviticus 19 and verse 36. You shall have just balances, just weights, a just ephah, and a just hen. And I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. So in other words, if you don't have just balances, you sell something to somebody else, and it's not very honest, then of course you are stealing from that person because you're getting something in return you're not really entitled to. So that's an aspect of stealing, an aspect of something which the eighth commandment prohibits. Now here's another one. Another one which applies to individuals, which applies to nations, and I don't know, I almost feel like every nation is guilty of that violation, of that transgression of God's law in Deuteronomy chapter 27. When you think of what's going on in the Middle East, that is actually the bone of contention right here. Because in Deuteronomy chapter 27 and in verse 17, Deuteronomy 27 and verse 17, cursed is the one who moves his neighbor's landmark. And all the people shall say, Amen. And if you go back to Deuteronomy chapter 19 and in verse 14, you read this, Deuteronomy 19 and verse 14. You shall not remove your neighbor's landmark, which the men of old have set, in your inheritance, which you will inherit in the land that the Lord your God is giving you to possess. You see, the Israelites were not allowed, for instance, to occupy certain lands because God says, no, I haven't given those to you. And today neighbors, well, might be trying to do this all the time, to remove or change the landmark just to get a bit more property, and God says you are a thief if you do. But there is another way of stealing, which can be found in Malachi chapter 3. Another statute which defines and explains more the eighth commandment. Malachi chapter 3, verses 8 and 9. Malachi chapter 3 and verse 8, will a man rob God? Or you could say, will a man steal from God? And yet you have robbed me. But you say, in what way have we robbed you? The answer, in tithes and offerings. And you are cursed. Now, how many times have we been reading that those who are violating God's commands are cursed? You are cursed with a curse, he says, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation. Now, there are many people who tithe and give offerings, but they give it to the wrong kind of a God. We have read earlier, you don't love the Lord your God if you worship other gods, if you serve other gods. So if you give tithes and offerings to anybody but the true God and his true church, doesn't do you any good. God is not accepting it. Let's go to the ninth commandment, Exodus 20 and verse 16. Exodus 20 and verse 16. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. Why? Because if you do, you don't love him. Now, what statutes, what judgments hang on this commandment? Exodus chapter 23 and verse 1. Exodus 23 and verse 1. Here's an interesting one. You shall not circulate a false report. If you say something, you better make sure it's true. If you're not absolutely clear on something, if you don't know whether your memory serves you well, you better don't say something. Because you might be guilty of circulating a false report, and if you do, you are cursed. If you say something, it's your burden of proof that what you say is true. It's that serious. In Exodus chapter 23 and verse 7, keep yourself far away from a false matter. Far away. Don't have anything to do with it. Of course, then, the famous one in Leviticus chapter 19 and in verse 11. Leviticus 19 and verse 11, you shall not steal. Here we go. You shall not steal, nor deal falsely, nor lie to one another. Right? In other words, giving false witness includes lying. You shall not lie to one another. You're saying something which isn't true, or which is perhaps only partially true. Don't do that. It's in violation of the ninth commandment. Also, Leviticus chapter 19 and verse 16. You shall not go about as a talebearer among your people, nor shall you take a stand against the life of your neighbor. I am the Lord. When it says talebearer, others again talk about the fact that you are saying something about somebody else which may not be entirely true. Don't do that. Because if you do, you are violating the ninth commandment. So let's go to the tenth one in Exodus chapter 20. Now, of course, I understand that the Catholic Church, for instance, they have a different way of numbering it because they don't want to get rid of the commandment, or they want to get rid of the commandment against idolatry. No, this is the tenth commandment here. Exodus chapter 20 and in verse 17. It's one commandment, what we are reading now. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his donkey, nor anything that is your neighbor's. That's all part of this one commandment. You could say, briefly, you shall not covet. Now, if you covet something which your neighbor has, you don't show love towards your neighbor. And so the question now is, what statutes, what judgments hang on this tenth commandment against covetousness? Let's look at Psalm 10. And let's notice verse 3. Psalm 10 and verse 3. For the wicked boasts of his heart's desire, and he blesses the greedy, and he renounces the Lord. See, that's a process which is being described. First, he has his covetousness. He has his heart's desire, but it's coming from a wicked mind. And then he is blessing those who are greedy. And then, of course, he renounces the Lord and falls away. It's a very serious commandment not to do that. In the book of Proverbs, chapter 21, we see again the same development. Proverbs 21, and I'm reading verses 25 and 26. The desire of the slothful kills him, for his hands refuse to labor. He covets greedily all day long. See, that's not doing anything, right? But he covets greedily all day long, and it ultimately kills him. Inside and maybe even outside. But the righteous gives and doesn't spare. See, the one who covets all day long, who is unable to give somebody else because he is not working to get something with his hands, he's called unrighteous. He's called wicked. You see, we don't want to be in that position. Also notice in the book of Micah. Micah chapter 2. And verse 2. Micah chapter 2 and verse 2. Here is described the mind of wicked people, those who devise iniquity, verse 1. It says in verse 2, they covet fields, they take them by violence, also houses, and seize them. And so they oppress a man and his house, a man and his inheritance. First you covet, and then you carry out what you covet. Covetousness leads to theft, leads to robbery, leads to violence, and ultimately to murder. That is the process. That is why it's so important that we are not to covet. It shows a total lack of love for the other person. And the Bible shows us in the New Testament that the law defines covetousness as sin. Romans chapter 7 and in verse 7. Romans chapter 7 and in verse 7. But it also shows us that you all by yourself would not even know that covetousness is sin as bad as all the others we talked about. Romans 7, 7. What shall we say then? Is the law sin? Certainly not. On the contrary, I wouldn't have known sin except through the law. For I wouldn't have known, I wouldn't have understood, I wouldn't have realized that this is sin. I wouldn't have known covetousness unless the law had said, you shall not covet. See, the law, the Ten Commandments, the last of the Ten Commandments. The law had to tell us that. The law has to tell us that covetousness is sin. You yourself wouldn't have known that. Doesn't make sense, perhaps, to the human mind because, you know, you don't do anything yet. But you see, hatred is sin, too. You haven't killed anybody yet. You look at another woman with lust in your eyes, you haven't done anything yet. But God says, but you have already committed adultery in your heart, because you will, if you have the opportunity. Same with covetousness. Same with all the other commandments we have just read about. Romans 13 and verse 9. Romans 13 and verse 9. For the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, you shall not covet. These are all the commandments, part of the second package of commandments against, or insofar as the love of neighbor is concerned. All of these, and he goes on to say, and if there is any other commandment, are all summed up in the saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. See, again, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, that's the law. And so these statutes, they hang then on, first of all, the Ten Commandments, or here the last six, hang on the love of God, or the love of neighbor, and then you have the statute and the judgments define it further. And so the spiritual law of the Ten Commandments, of the statutes, of the judgments, as we have read them today, they are still in force and effect today. Because they define love towards God and love towards neighbor. It's ridiculous to say, well, you know, the law's done away with. All I need to do is love. You don't even know what love is with that kind of an approach. Now, they fulfill your love towards God and your neighbor if you keep the commandments and the statutes and the judgments. When we want to love God, we have to love our neighbor. That is the love of God, the love towards God, that we keep his commandments. And love is the fulfilling of the law.